Greece gets close to a bailout, and this time we really mean it. From APM, American Public Media, I'm Adrienne Hill in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, February 20th. Coming up, the Chinese company that makes your iPhones tries to do better when it comes to its employees, plus one emu for free to anyone who can catch it, and L.L. Bean takes a turn in the fashion spotlight. Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
European finance ministers are meeting in Brussels today. They're expected to finally approve a new bailout loan package for Greece. The price tag, $170 billion. But will a deal put an end to this Greek drama? For more, we go to Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Good morning.
Hello, Adrienne.
So is this bailout deal finally going to happen? We've been flirting with this for weeks now.
Well, as you say, given all the previous false dawns, I'm reluctant to say this is it. But the French finance minister says there should be a deal today. It does look as if the EU and the IMF will now approve the loan package for Greece so it can stave off a possible default in March.
So this is it. Ta-da. Wipe our hands. This is the end of Greece's debt crisis at long last?
No. if the deal is approved today, the Greeks will get enough cash to tide them over till the end of March. But there could be further trouble after that. The Greek government has had to agree to some very painful budget cuts for this. Cuts in pensions, cuts in public sector jobs. 150,000 jobs are going to have to go. These are extremely unpopular in Greece. And as Georg Grodzki of Legal and General Investment points out, there's a general election in Greece in April.
In a few weeks' time, we may have a completely new government in Greece. Certainly, we will have a new parliament. And right now, very far right and far left-wing parties are gaining strength, and they would probably revoke any agreement.
And with that in mind, the EU and the IMF are said to be insisting that the bailout money is paid into an escrow account and only released in dribs and drabs. So the Greek debt crisis may now cross a dangerous hurdle in March, but it certainly isn't over.
So you and I will be talking a lot.
I'm afraid so.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks.
Okay, Adrienne.
Oil prices have jumped to a near 9-month high this morning. That's after Iran cut exports to Britain and France over sanctions related to Iran's nuclear program. For more on the move, we go to Saket Vimprala. He's an oil and gas analyst for Business Monitor International in London. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
So neither Britain nor France are big buyers of Iranian oil. Why is this news pushing up prices so much today?
The news is pushing up prices partly because the market is concerned that what could follow next would be a further cutoff of supplies elsewhere in the region, including to major European buyers like Italy and Spain and so on, but also fears that as Saudi Arabia increases production to meet the shortfall in demand, that global spare capacity of oil production is starting to fall. And so in the event of any unforeseen disruption to oil supplies elsewhere, the world may not have enough spare capacity to meet the incremental demand.
Now, what does today's announcement from Iran tell us about the pressure Iran is feeling from international sanctions?
This is, as you've noted earlier, a largely symbolic measure, but I think it would suggest that they are getting increasingly desperate.
So what's this going to mean for gas prices here in the U.S.?
Well, we could see gas prices, particularly along the east coast of the USA, go up as a result of these measures, particularly because although at the moment the U.S. doesn't import any Iranian oil, the U.S. is not immune to any increases in the price of Brent crude, which is the main benchmark for the European market. And movements in Brent crude can affect refined fuels prices along the East Coast. And so we could see prices start to move up as a result of this.
Saket Vimprala, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Those rising gas prices aren't just squeezing drivers. Frequent flyers are feeling the pinch, too. Nearly every airline boosted fares over the past week. And as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports, there are probably more price hikes to come.
Jet fuel prices have taken off since the beginning of the year, and last week JetBlue and Southwest decided to pass some of those costs along to passengers. And it didn't take long for most of the others to follow. Fuel prices are expected to keep rising, and George Hobica at airfarewatchdog.com sees more fare hikes in the future, within limits.
Airlines can raise airfares only so much before consumers stay home, drive, or find other means of transportation.
He says that even goes for business travelers.
Our company was just handed down an edict. Please treat the company's money as your own and consider teleconferencing and Skyping.
Still, mergers and bankruptcies have reduced competition in the airline industry. Rick Sini at faircompare.com says that gives survivors more opportunities to pass along costs.
I expect airlines to continue to try to raise prices every couple weeks with limited success.
Sini says they keep a close eye on sales of middle seats, and when those fall off, airlines have to roll back price hikes. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Now to China and a Foxconn technology, the giant electronics maker. Foxconn puts together more than a third of the world's electronic gadgets, including our smartphones and computers. It assembles products for companies like Apple and Dell, and it's come under pressure for mistreating its workers. Now, Foxconn says it's going to change its ways. The companies will raise salaries at its factories and trim overtime. For more, we go to David Barboza. He's been covering the story for the New York Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why is Foxconn raising pay for its workers now?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on Foxconn. First of all, there's probably pressure from Apple, which probably wants to see the workers better compensated. And also, as lots of factories in China force workers to do a lot of overtime to make enough money to live on. Sometimes it's illegal amount of overtime. And so by paying their workers more, they can reduce overtime and make sure that they comply with the laws.
Now, how significant is this pay raise for people who work there?
Pretty significant. It doesn't mean it's a great salary, but it's getting to be a decent salary for a migrant worker. And if they really do pay 25% more, and it's what we think it is, about $400 a month at some factories, it would be close to a pretty decent wage.
Now, is Foxconn making any other changes at its factories? I know there's been a lot of concern about safety conditions in the past.
I think they're making a lot of changes because they have to. They're under pressure. Apple and the other companies that deal with Foxconn, which is basically every electronics giant, is probably going to start demanding that more because of all the publicity around it.
Now, does this mean we can all feel better about our iPhones and iPads?
Probably a little better. Factories in China are notorious for deceiving auditors, saying one thing and doing another, having lots of people off the books. But it is moving the direction that factories are under pressure to improve standards and pay.
Now, what does this move say more broadly about the future of China's economy and sort of where things are headed there?
Well, I think, you know, it's still not a very mature economy, but it is maturing. And so to produce in China is getting more expensive. Workers are going to be compensated better. And so the gap between China and the rest of the world is going to shrink. And if you look at the bigger picture, this is probably heading toward a major shift in China's model, where it's not just going to be cheap labor with a lot of illegal activities in export factories. And I think that's what you're seeing in this Foxconn and Apple story. And, you know, it means for most of the world's major brands are going to be producing a country that's increasingly expensive, or at least not as cheap as it used to be. And that will change a lot of things.
New York Times reporter David Barboza, thanks.
You're welcome.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to the cuddly side of the news, koalas. Conservationists have urged the Australian government to add the koala to its list of nationally threatened species. They worry it could go extinct. But so far, the government hasn't taken action. For more on the economic implications of the decision, we go to the BBC's Phil Mercer in Sydney, Australia, for our Midday Extra. Good morning, Phil.
Morning to you.
So why are koalas in so much trouble these days?
Well, the big issue here in Australia is that no one knows exactly how many of these furry marsupials there are. Conservationists here believe there are about 100,000 of these animals in the wild, and they believe that the population is continuing to fall because of various threats. They include a disease that causes blindness, pneumonia, and infertility. The building of homes and roads is also eating away at their habitat. So certainly the environmental lobby here in Australia believes that this iconic animal is under threat and is slowly sliding towards extinction.
Now, why is the government delaying action here?
The federal environment minister is a man called Tony Burke. He's asking a panel of wildlife experts to give him more information detailing areas where koala populations are thought to be in trouble. And Mr. Burke has always insisted that this very important decision, whether to list the koala as endangered or threatened, shouldn't be rushed. Therefore, he wants to canvass as much expert opinion as he can before he hands down what will be a very important decision. And we understand that decision is likely to come at the end of April now.
What sort of economic impacts could this decision have?
Well, the Australian government is being urged to declare the koala a threatened or endangered animal. What that would mean in practice, it would give federal authorities in this country the power to protect these furry marsupials from development. For example, if a company wanted to build a new highway, it would also, under the law, have to build, for example, underpasses through which koalas could crawl, given that they need a continuous stretch of forest in which to thrive. So the idea is that if you build a road or a housing development, it has to be wildlife friendly. Conservationists believe that vested interests such as mining companies and big property developers may well be leaning on the authorities, but certainly we've seen no evidence of that here in Australia so far.
Now, when I think of Australia, I think of koalas, and it makes me wonder, how important are koalas to the country's economy?
I think any of Australia's flora and fauna, being as unique as it is a draw card for international visitors. The first thing to point out to the younger generation is that marsupials of this type, koalas, are not bears. They have a pouch. They eat plants. They live in eucalyptus trees, and they are an amazing draw card for tourists, along with wombats, which are their closest cousins. And of course, everyone knows about the kangaroos and the wallabies. So certainly the cuddly side of the Australian wildlife scene is a huge draw card for international visitors. On the less welcoming side of the ledger when it comes to wildlife, of course, you could include Australia's venomous snakes, spiders, sharks, and crocodiles, definitely not cuddly. And of course, koalas would fit the bill. Whenever you think of koala, the word cuddly does spring to mind.
Now, that's my last question for you. Are koalas actually cuddly?
They can be very aggressive, and they do have very sharp claws. And generally, those claws are for climbing trees. Most the likelihood is you're more likely to see a koala up in a eucalyptus tree munching on a leaf. And we understand it's the oil in the eucalyptus leaves that makes the koalas so drowsy. They sleep so many hours during the day, you'll be lucky to see one moving. But yes, they are very, very cuddly, and they were almost hunted to extinction in this country in the early 20th century. Trades in their fur to the United States and Europe were very, very popular. That almost led to their extinction. But now conservationists believe that one of Australia's most recognizable animals is again fighting for its long-term survival.
BBC's Phil Mercer, thanks.
Thank you.
Ohio is planning to open 4 new casinos later this year in Cincinnati, Cleveland, Columbus, and Toledo. It will join a long list of states who have turned to gambling as a way to attract tourists and raise money. From WCPN in Cleveland, Brian Bull reports.
The Horseshoe Casino in Cleveland is one of 4 being built in Ohio. They're expected to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. Last month, part of the Horseshoe's parking garage collapsed under wet concrete. But Chris Warren has a lucky feeling about the casino. He's the city's chief of regional development.
It's fair to say that on an annual basis that there will be millions of dollars of new property income and parking taxes flowing to the city of Cleveland. That's good.
Warren says up to 15 million people a year will visit the Horseshoe. He expects annual revenues up to $30 million. Marcus Glover is the casino's general manager. He says local businesses and attractions will cash in too.
We'll spend a lot of time positioning the property of Horseshoe Cleveland. You know, it's come to Cleveland and go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Come to Cleveland, go to Playhouse Square. And oh, while you're here, we hope you pay us a visit.
But critics say casinos can shortchange communities. Professor John Kent of the University of Illinois Champaign researches casino development. He is concerned by the Horseshoe Casino's 20,000 slot machines. He says each one will take in at least $100,000 a year.
That's money that's not going to buy cars, refrigerators, computers, and even food and clothing.
Meanwhile, critics say that as more and more states build casinos, their purported benefits to tourism may no longer stay on the table, as locals, not out-of-state visitors, will become the primary players. In Cleveland, I'm Brian Bull for Marketplace.
Outdoor outfitter L.L. Bean is celebrating its 100th year in business. At the same time, one of its oldest products is making a big comeback. New Hampshire Public Radio's Shannon Mullen has more.
It was sort of a homecoming. Almost 20 years ago, I bought a pair of L.L. Bean's Maine hunting shoes, so it seemed fitting to wear my boots to Brunswick, Maine, on a tour of the factory where they were made. Cindy Obie runs a triple needle sewing machine that stitches the rubber bottoms to the top leather part of the boot.
How long have you been working here?
19 years.
You make it look really easy.
Thank you.
You think my boots came through this particular spot?
Yes, they did.
Quite a while ago, though.
Yes.
Is it that obvious?
Yeah, the old bottoms.
I prefer to call them broken in. And this year, my old boots are more popular than ever. L.L. Bean says it's on pace to move more than 500,000 pairs in 2012, three times more than it sold a few years ago. Not bad for an old-school relic born out of Yankee ingenuity. The way the story goes, back in 1912, the company's founder and namesake, Leon Leonwood Bean, got tired of coming home from his hunting trips with cold, wet feet.
So L.L. had this idea.
Tom Armstrong is chief merchandising officer at L.L. Bean.
He cut off a rubber boot, I think it was a fishing boot or something, and he sewed on a leather upper. And people bought them, and his first 100 boots he made, 90 came back. They did not work.
Bean eventually perfected the design, and today the boots are one of the company's best sellers. They've even been featured in fashion magazines. The December issue of Glamour called the Bean boot this winter's unexpected it shoe.
I think there's something about the authenticity of a product that's just designed to do what it's doing, and it works. And for whatever reason, the Americans are loving it again.
At the Brunswick Boot Factory, operations manager John Camilio is hiring more than 100 new workers and adding a third shift to keep up with the demand.
It's no surprise to me. I think people love a great value.
And all of a sudden, you're at the cutting edge of fashion.
I wouldn't have expected that.
In Brunswick, Maine, I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
And finally, an escaped emu. The 150-pound bird escaped from a farm in Grand Isle, Vermont, 5 weeks ago. It's popped up around town. There have been the emu equivalent of goose chases, emu chases, I suppose. But so far, no one's been able to catch it. Not that the emu's owner minds. According to Vermont's WCAX-TV, the farmer has posted an ad in the local paper. Free emu if you can capture it. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.